This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTKA.com, Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and as we do every Thursday, 9 o'clock hour, it is M-Go Blog time here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA. Joining us, the crew, starting off with the man that started it all over on M-Go Blog, Brian Cook. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Hello.
All right. His lieutenant, his number two. The man next to the man, Seth Fisher, how are you?
I know it's going to create more work for me, but somehow we got to get Michigan women's hockey. After watching USA Canada last night, like we've got to get in on this.
And then we have Craig Ross, who's with us this morning. Okay, good morning.
I am the latrine orderly for MGO blog. You got the first lieutenant. If you get in down there, I'm latrine orderly.
I got you. All right. So, fellas, Jim Harbaugh, his contract is signed. It was inevitable. We knew that was going to be coming. I haven't seen the details yet. I heard what it was going to be, but we'll see if that matches up with what it actually is. I'm curious your thoughts on whether this deal, like ESPN is saying, signals the end of the NFL dalliance like he says it does. Now, you're going to have. You do have some people who are skeptical of that, who have expressed their doubts, some even in the Michigan media that have expressed their doubts about, this whether this really is over or not. Even ESPN, though, is picking up on, hey, we don't think this is going to happen again after this deal. I'm curious what you think, starting with you, Brian.
Well, I mean, I think from a Harbaugh perspective, you know, Harbaugh is Harbaugh. So do I think that this contract means that he's never going to flirt with another job again? No, I don't. but I also think that, you know, it feels like if it was going to happen, it was going to happen this offseason, right? He beats Ohio State. He wins Big Ten. You know, he's got his mojo back. The NFL would be interested, I believe. But even when the Raiders job came open and the Dolphins job, like neither of those really went after him. So it's hard to think of other organizations where it'd be like, yes, Jim Harbaugh is a better fit here. I mean, so I kind of feel like this was probably it in terms of mutual interest. Now, I don't think that we're never going to hear about this again, but I do think that future rumbles are probably going to be less seismic.
So let me frame it differently. You're right, Brian. We'll hear about this. Look, talking about Jim Harbaugh and an NFL team is like click treasure. Like that's going to happen. And you know other schools are going to use it in recruiting. I guess my more properly framed, do you think the threat has been abated? Do you think the threat has been nullified mostly, if not completely, by this latest dalliance, Seth?
I got to see the contract because I got to know how big that buyout's going to be. If Harbaugh's willing to sign something that says, you know, it's going to be $7 million or $9 million per year that was left on his contract, if he goes to the NFL, then that's going to do it. Because the NFL really didn't want him. Brian's right. That, like, look at all the opportunities that came open this year. Chicago is another one. Like, that's where he got drafted, right? Short of Indianapolis, I think we've got, like, the full Harbaugh set, right? Like, every single team that he could possibly be, or Jacksonville, but then the guy who was at Jacksonville that knows Harbaugh is coming to Michigan. Right. So, like, even that threat's gone. So, like, what's left in the to bring him to the NFL unless like his brother gets sick and the Ravens need to like, you know, replace Harbaugh with Harbaugh or something really quick. But even they have someone internally that they're probably prepared for that. I don't think that the NFL wants him nearly as bad as the people who write about the NFL like to bring him up because he's a successful coach who's out there and went to the Super Bowl. And there's not a whole lot of those. And they those jobs come open all the time. But we've been through two cycles now. We've caught most of them. So you just need enough in the contract to say, NFL, you really don't want to do this. And if you add, you know, a big chunk of change to what they have to go through to get Harbaugh, then it's probably done. And if the money is high enough, then if it's done, if it actually isn't done, if someone actually is willing to pay that, then Michigan can be like, okay, well, we'll take that chunk of change and we'll hire, you know, everybody's head coaches as our assistants or something.
Craig?
Yeah, I guess I come from a slightly different perspective. The like Seth, I want to know what the contract says. I take Harbaugh at face value that at least right now he's done with any dalliance vis-a-vis the NFL. I don't think he has any intention to pursue a head coaching job in the NFL. He said very nice things about Ann Arbor and Ward Manuel and the athletic department, and I take those all seriously and at face value. What I'm most concerned about is not Michigan keeping Harbaugh, but has Manuel left himself with enough flexibility so if he needs to get rid of Harbaugh, he can get rid of him. And that's something that he's done. He's been pretty dexterous. I've been impressed with Ward Manuel. I thought last year the contract that they negotiated was smart, and I felt that it was great that Harbaugh agreed to it. Good for him. And I'm not saying, hey, I think Harbaugh should be gone. To the contrary, I'm very happy that he's back. On the other hand, I don't want I would be uncomfortable with Michigan sitting with some massive buyout that said, okay, you know, Michigan
has
you can't, yeah, you can't, right? Because that's not a great situation for the athletic department to be in, almost in regard to any coach. So that's my question. And so, you know, I'm curious to see what the contract looks like. But otherwise, it all looks good. I take it. I mean, Michigan has a coach who's proven he's a good coach. And it looks like he'll be here for a while. And I think he's serious about being here for a while. I'm not concerned about negative recruiting from other programs. Because the truth is, what, Harbaugh, this will be his seventh year. Is that right? Mm. Seventh, yep. Or eight, I don't. So that's pretty stable, in you know, among the among major schools in terms of who's your head coach.
Eight years. Yeah.
So you know, I'm not concerned about that.
All right. So now with that behind us, though, now we can shift our attention to spring football to next season, like fully. You don't have to talk about the coaching movement and contract extensions and all of that. That being the case, I'm going to ask you guys an unfair question. We'll start in reverse order this time. Who's Michigan's quarterback next year? Craig Ross, make the prediction right now. Who's going to be the guy lining up behind center?
Boy, I wish I knew. I have no idea, but I'm going to say J.J. McCarthy. I'm sort of going average fan on this one. I think the ceiling there is higher, and that's what I think. JJ interestingly said that he's here for the duration. I mean, which I say, hey, good for him. He said, I don't care what happens here. If McNamara beats me out this spring, I ain't leaving. And I really liked that. So, but my prediction is more likely than not, JJ McCarthy.
Seth?
Is Cade listening? If Cade's listening, then you don't replace the Big Ten champion quarterback, The starter of the Big Ten championship team. Now that he's gone, as long as it's between us, I mean, JJ was playing the second half of the Georgia game already. Like, I mean, it kind of already happened. So, I mean, we're going to go through spring and fall, and Cade is not a guy you want to lose. Like, you need two quarterbacks these days, especially because JJ loves to kind of get a little wild and throw his body into places that he shouldn't do. So, I mean, JJ, if he's the starter, he's getting hurt this year at some point, and you're going to need Cade. So I honestly think both of them, I think JJ is going to be the better quarterback this year.
Brian?
Well, I mean, I think you're going to see something similar where into the season both guys are playing. Like, I think the ratio is probably going to change. You're going to see more JJ, and then at some point, you know, it's going to be clear who the guy should be. And I concur that, I mean, I hope it's JJ McCarthy, because just his legs gives you a totally different aspect of the offense. And we've seen the ability to throw in NFL windows. We've seen his deep accuracy. I feel like he does have more upside. And if it is Cade McNamara, that means that McCarthy is throwing interceptions and not running the offense the way that Harbaugh wants him to run the offense. So the hopeful answer is JJ McCarthy. And that's what I would lean towards now.
Yeah, it's definitely what I'm leaning towards is JJ McCarthy. It was inexperience. Inexperience was the hindrance, and you know, growing in him that sort of risk averse approach to the game, which was not his deal in high school, right? And I think he's adopted that and adapted to that sort of mindset. He just brings so much to the table with his legs, his arm talent. Is immense, and I really think that, you know, his presence, that was another thing that you had to wait to be established. He's a freshman last year, and Cade was a returning veteran who had gotten a lot of buy-in on the team. Stands to reason that he should be the leader on the field, but I think JJ has gotten a lot of that over the past year as well. I just think you add it all up, and he's going to be the guy. Is he going to be the guy exclusively? I think you'll see Cade get some snaps. You need to be getting a couple of quarterback snaps, to your point, Seth. But I just think that the talent gap is significant. And if the experience isn't something that, makes that gap or bridges that gap, if you will, if that inexperience doesn't make it a hindrance for you, like it won't next year, I think you got to go with JJ McCarthy. The only thing that would make it not be him is if he were to rest on his laurels and not perform well in the spring or fall. I just don't see that in the card. So
it seems more likely to me that if Cade wins it in the spring, he's really won it. And that he's just killing it to the extent that I'm not concerned. The concern is of course what Seth has said. What if JJ kills it in the spring and Cade just leaves?
Well, it's because that's why you won't see a quarterback win it in the spring.
Because at that point, now Michigan has JJ and a cipher, and that's not a good situation.
It'll be nebulous.
I mean, I don't. Cade McNamara did win a Big Ten title, right? Like he's
for sure
a redshirt sophomore when he did it, right? Like, this is not a guy who's going to be beaten out obviously or cleanly, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, I think so. I hope that's true.
There's going to be a legit competition, and I don't think that it's inconceivable that he wins it. I mean, I think that everybody is looking at the upside of McCarthy, but, you know, that's going to be something that has to be proven actually on the field, right? There's going to be what we want JJ McCarthy to be, and then there's going to be what he actually is. And there's probably going to be a gap between that, and if it's big enough, then Cade McNamara has a real shot to win a job.
So great segue into where I wanted to go next. The gap between what it is and what we thought it was going to be when at its inception, NIL. And I shouldn't say we. what they thought it was going to be at its inception, because I think what it is exactly what we thought it was going to be. Right. But here's my question. As we see states either totally repealing legislation or amending legislation. They repealed a law in Alabama. They're amending a law in Florida because they feel like, hey, this is putting our institutions at a competitive disadvantage. I have long been of the mind that this is a trivial sort of endeavor getting involved in sports for politicians, but they have to be writing NIL laws anyway. They have to be investigating this anyway. You need to be worrying about how to help student athletes maximize their opportunities, offer protections within the law, all the things that go along with. Stands to reason to me then, even someone who thinks it's a trivial pursuit for politicians, stands to reason that they should look at it. Are our laws putting our institutions at a competitive disadvantage to other programs in other states. I wonder if you guys think I'm off base about that.
It's possible. One of the things that we saw is that states with no law tend to be maximally permissive because the NCAA is just like, whatever. And the laws that actually got passed are usually a little bit more restrictive. So, you know, I think that might be part of it, but I think it's really pretty easy to put up some sort of semblance of quid pro quo and just roll with it. So I kind of feel like it's just Michigan isn't used to it. Like Texas A&M, like they had the whole thing already ready to go. It's just like, all right, well, now we can do this above the table, right? Alabama, same deal, right? So Michigan doesn't have that infrastructure and they have to build it, but they will.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to add to that. I mean, the numbers are going up because it was there were people who wouldn't get as involved, and I think Texas A&M in particular wanted to make a splash. They were looking at this as an opportunity to move up to that level of Alabama. And unfortunately, Fisher's kind of a pretty good coach, so it's not like when Ole Miss just jumped in. They're like, we're going to win the sweepstakes this year and just threw a bunch of money at it. Jimbo actually could win a title because he knows what he's doing and he's got a pretty good staff down there. So maybe Texas A&M is smart to get there. Michigan's going to have to figure out where they fit. And I mean, it's got to sort itself out. Ohio State's battling with the SEC schools and trying to like keep up with them as far as their laws. And they are not just reacting to the fact that the law is stopping them. They're reacting to the fact that schools are using that to recruit against them. Like you ask, well, those Texas A&M guys went there. They're like, well, the Ohio law says I can't do this and this and this, right? So that's what they're reactive to. And if you use the legislature to be reactive to recruiting, that's going to be a big mess because they cannot move at the speed that recruiting moves.
But they're doing it here. I mean, Alabama. I talked about it this morning. They've repealed the law because they were one of the early adopters, right?
Right.
Thinking that getting the law out of the gate is going to help them. Now they're seeing it's actually a hindrance to them.
They wrote theirs really fast. Like the early adopters, like Michigan, California, there were other states that were moving faster because they wanted to upset the status quo. Alabama wasn't moving at all originally, and Ohio wasn't moving at all. They wanted the status quo. They were trying to hold on to that as long as they could. The leader of the people trying to maintain the status quo is the athletic director of Ohio State. That's who wanted to keep it the old way because that's what benefited them. Then when things were shifting, they wrote their laws really quickly, and I think that's where they got in some of the trouble is that those laws were written really fast. They were put into place really fast. They didn't have like a whole legislative process for them because the point was to be reactive to the current day, what was going to happen. They thought this was going to only the states that passed it were be able to do this, and the states that didn't pass it were not. So they passed one really quick.
Have you guys noticed that Texas A&M is in a sort of denial spot? Because there was a number of stories that came out that said, oh, 25 to 30 million is what they paid for this class. And now they're saying, oh, no, we didn't give them anything. It's just that this is just the garden spot of the world, College Station. And that's why they all wanted to come here. Have you noticed this? I mean, it's very weird.
Well, I think that number is probably extremely high. Like I don't buy the high end of that either, right? Like that's how much is the payroll for an NFL team, and you're dropping $25 million on a quarter of a college football team? That's not right. That's not right. I'm sure it's in the seven digits, but I don't think it's in the eight digits.
So they were saying that for the class, or that was like
the class
for the team.
That was class. The class.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, no, that was the original reporting. Was the class was in the mid 20 millions.
Well, and, they paid something, and, let's be clear here.
Yeah, and then Texas A&M came out and said, oh, no, people just want to come here.
See, so the gap between what it is and what they thought it was going to be, they actually thought it wasn't going to be paper for play. Like, come on, really?
Who thought? Michigan thought it wasn't going to be?
No, I'm talking about the NC. You can do anything. It just can't be pay for play. Well, what is it then? That's exactly what it is.
The NCAA was just the NCAA knows what they are at this point. They're just a fig leaf. There is no reality to that. So anything that they're saying is not real. It's just like, okay, we have to react to whatever is in the papers today. But like the NCAA does not exist as far as it's concerned.
I agree. It is 9:29 on a Thursday morning here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. The Wolverines on the hardwood are embarking upon a 7-game slate here where every game is a resume builder. Every game is one that can help them in their NCAA tournament hopes. Starting with tonight's matchup with Iowa, we'll start digging into that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider MGO Blog Roundtable on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
All clear on the radio.
So the story was that Ewers, Quinn, whatever his name is, at Ohio State got $1 million, right? That was like reported everywhere. Mm. Now, is that nonsense? Is it?
I mean, hey, he got a significant amount. I don't think it was $1 million.
Well, also, like, that's like the top quarterback recruit in the class. So if anybody is going to get the top amount of money, right, it's that guy. So Texas A&M has 5 stars in their class, but they don't have 25 of them, right?
You know, yeah, I mean, I imagine Walter Nolan probably got something in the, you know, in the high numbers there. But, like, I mean, what's different is that it used to be $30,000 could win you any recruitment, and that's not true anymore. Now it's in the hundreds, right?
No, I don't think that's true, because there was a kid named Albert Means who I think Alabama got in trouble for, and that number was definitely like 100 to 200K.
All told. But I mean, like, that's, so it's over like a certain amount of time, right? So like they would never just give you a lump of cash, because then you could just take the lump of cash and leave.
Right. I remember like when the big lead sold, it was like, oh, this is $1 million. But like, they didn't give that guy $1 million. Right. They gave him some amount of money, and then he had a contract to keep doing it at a salary.
Like, right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So I wanted to get a couple. He said, Joe says the QB battle sounds very much like Brady Henson. I'm not saying Kate is Brady, but sounds like a similar situation. I don't think that this is. No,
I don't think JJ McCarthy was promised by Harbaugh when he came in that you're going to start. And I think Henson was definitely promised to keep him away from FSU.
Back in 30.
And not only that, I just think that Tom Brady is, even though he wasn't the Tom Brady that he was in the NFL at Michigan, I think there was a lot of belief in the program that he was a big time guy. Now, I think it was was it their first fall? Whatever it was, I know that there was a point where Stan Parrish was like, Tom Brady's.
So in 97, he almost beat out Greasy for the job in spring ball, and then he got hurt. And so Brady didn't, he was working his way back, and then he got shut down for the rest of that season.
Fellas, I think I mentioned this last week, how, you know, Crispin, former Penn State standout, is a player. Yeah.
At Penn State, you stand out. If you can play basketball at Penn State, you are a standout.
So he was commenting on covering the Michigan-Penn State game and then covering the Michigan-Purdue game. It's like, man, these are two different teams. Like, I do not understand how that team that we watched at Penn State that couldn't hit the broadside of a barn comes out against Purdue and hits everything. It's more of the same as far as I'm concerned, and as far as our conversation is concerned, that this team, that's them. They're going to be up and down. They are not going to shoot it consistently. So when you look at this final 7-game slate, then against that backdrop, how realistic is it to say that they can win 4 of these games, Brian, starting with tonight's game, which I think is the most winnable in the slate against Iowa? Well, at least the home game against Iowa would be the most winnable, but this is the most beatable opponent is Iowa, in my opinion.
Well, it's realistic, especially against Iowa, which has the same kind of shape statistically as both Purdue and Ohio State. It has a top 20, maybe top 10 offense and a defense languishing around 100th. So against both Ohio State and Purdue, Michigan got great shots. There were 2 mid-range jumpers in the Ohio State game that didn't come from Hunter Dickinson. 2. They got 25 shots at the rim. They got a bunch of open threes and they just couldn't hit. And then you got EJ Liddell hitting crazy contested shots over Musa Diabate, and there you go. So I think that they're performing better defensively. I think that the offense has really clicked into gear, and Michigan is adapted to the fact that Hunter Dickinson can shoot and has gravity. They're adapting to the fact that their 4 is Musa Diabate and doesn't really stretch. So the quality of looks in the last two games, Michigan dominated both those games, and they lost one of them because they couldn't hit. So if they keep playing like that, yeah, I think they've got a pretty good shot at winning four of these games. The thing is like they haven't done it against a defense that's actually good yet. So that's the one thing I'm waiting to see.
Well, they certainly won't run into that tonight.
No, no, they won't. So they hit shots tonight, they win.
Right. So, and I said this last week, you know, the offense is getting them looks. Them knocking them down, though, is that's going to be a box of chocolates like Forrest Gump. I just don't know if they're going to be able to do it or not. But your point that you just made, Brian, is the one that I'm seizing upon. I agree wholeheartedly. The defensive efforts that we've seen of late, they've been able to separate those. That if they aren't going well on the offensive end, whether it's talking about Penn State and them dropping the zone on them and throwing and blowing them up, or even Ohio State, I mean, they had some paltry amount. Paltry amount at halftime. I think they had 60 points late in the game. I mean, they didn't score a ton. They were hitting contested shots. Defense has been there. The question is, do you think they can muster enough, Seth, to get back to you in this final seven games to win at least four of them?
Michigan, I mean, obviously, Michigan is actually favored to win on KenPom four of these seven games. They're favored to win Rutgers when they come here. They're favored to beat Illinois, Michigan State at home, and Iowa at home, and then lose on the road to Ohio State and Wisconsin. And tonight, actually, too, they're favored to lose. They're just such a streaky team. They have some guys who are just absolutely streaky shooters, right? Like Caleb Houston, sometimes he's on, and sometimes he's not. If he's not making his shots, he is a very net negative on the court. If he's making those shots every single time out there, that changes the whole ball game. If Musa Diabate is locked in defensively and he's putting out a lot of effort, then they're a really good, they're a pretty decent defensive team. If he's not, you know, if they're not getting everything out of him, they kind of fall apart and they, you know, they can't really replace him. They don't have much of a bench that they can rely on. Every time they put the bench out there, they come out en masse and, you know, Michigan's kind of struggling and you're just kind of hoping one of those guys does something. And then, you know, Devontae Jones, too. Like, his three-point shot is also very streaky. Sometimes he's out there and he's going to make it. He's only going to take free ones. So, I mean, they don't have anything that they can just sit back and rely on this team. And because of that, they are susceptible to losing games when they play better. The Ohio State game, I thought they played better than Ohio State. They lost because they didn't make the shots. I mean, obviously, Purdue, when everything comes together, that's what they look like. And they can actually compete with anybody in the country. But the chances of going seven games and having all your things clicking, or even enough of them clicking, you're not running into one where, like, you know, all your big variables go against you, is pretty low. Like, some of those, something's going to happen in those games, and the margins are so small that that could really cost you. Hopefully, you know, they win a couple that, like, if they beat Michigan State or whatnot, like, there's a couple that they could win that would look really good on their resumes, even if they're supposed to win them.
Yeah, I don't know if people look at the Penn State victory in a different light after watching Michigan State drop a 14-point lead late. I mean, I said, we got pumped. I'm curious, Craig, what did you think of the officiating in the Ohio State game? I'm just
you saved, you saved that one for me.
I was waiting for this.
The biggest reason that we lost in Ohio State was for the reasons you guys have outlined. It isn't just that Michigan is an erratic shooting team. They're like at the polls. I mean, I'm sitting with a couple of Purdue guys in the Purdue game, and they're looking at me saying, you guys don't shoot it like that. And I said, well, yeah, we don't. But then, we did. And aside from playing a good basketball game and good defense against Purdue, they shot it. And then I don't think there was much of a difference in the Ohio State game. In fact, I went back and looked at the tape and carefully, and I would say that Ohio State shots were 85 to 90% contested. And a lot of them were crappy shots that hit the back rim and bounced in or, you know, so it was, and on the other end of the court, outsider shots at the rim by my count, I had us at 23% from the floor, except for shots right at the rim, And we were 3 of 16 from three until the last minute when Caleb made a short corner three near the end of the game. So that was the big deal. But no, the officiating wasn't good. Getting back to your point. I mean, there's a key play in the game where Musa makes a wonderful play, steals the ball. Michigan is down five. He's going to steal the ball. He's going to cut it to three with a slam, and they take it away, and they give him two free throws. So all of a sudden, a three-point game is a seven-point game. And I went in the second half, I watched in slow motion very carefully at Liddell, and I have him for 8 or 9 fouls. And 4 blatant fouls, 4 that are just absurd. He got called for 0 of them. Now, he did get called once on a play where he didn't foul anyone. So the one call they made against him was a bad call against Liddell. But the officiating was not great. But that wasn't the biggest reason why Michigan lost. The reason why Michigan lost was, as you guys have pointed out, they just didn't shoot the ball. Defensively, they have played better. I mean, we've moved up to number 88 in KenPom on defense, which isn't great, but it's a lot better than where we've been this season. And you can't look at the team and not say, okay, this coaching staff and this team, they've worked hard at trying to become a better defensive team. So I think they have improved there. But in the end, are they going to shoot it or not? I don't know. Game by game, I have no idea. They could go out and miss 20 in a row, or they could go out and be, hot. One thing's for sure to me, they're going to be at one end of the spectrum or the other. There's like no in between with them. So.
Picking up on the same thing, and yet I find myself oddly optimistic looking at these final 7 games, because I mean, all these teams, for all the up and down that we see of Michigan, I mean, look at Michigan State losing 3 of their last 4. I mean, very comparable to Iowa, as you just pointed out there, Brian. You think that not Wisconsin, but Rutgers just went into Wisconsin and beat them.
Incidentally, Rutgers is 10-5 in conference, and they're coming off, and people haven't paid attention, I don't think, they're coming off wins with Michigan State, Ohio State, at Wisconsin, and Illinois. Those are their last 4 games. They won all of them. And they're like playing against nails. I mean, that's a really physical, tough team. They're not particularly, I don't think they're super talented, but there's something going on there that's just hard to play against.
Well, they were definitely impressive. I think I may have mentioned this on a previous roundtable that at one point I had Johnny Davis as my favorite for Big Ten Player of the Year. He still may be. I mean, the way that guy has played in big games, his averages, I know Ira has the numbers, he is very impressive in there against the top opponents. But Rutgers shut him down, relatively speaking. Yeah. I think he maybe had, 10 or 11 points in that game. I'm watching that game, and I was already sort of leaning Jaden Ivey. Even though he doesn't average as many points, I think that has everything to do with, the points being more spread out on this team. But I look around this league, and I just feel like, man, yeah, Michigan's up and down, but so is the rest of this.
So is the rest of the league, yeah. Yeah, interesting for me, and I don't know what you guys think about this. I've been looking at NBA mock drafts, and Ivy and Johnny Davis and Keegan Murray are all look like lottery picks if they decide to come out. And you look at the Michigan guys, and they're nowhere to be found. They're dropping or evaporating. You will see Musa on a few in the second round. You see Caleb on some, but not many. And Hunter is nowhere. I can't even find him in the second round of any draft. And it makes me wonder, whether these guys really are going to go. I mean, my assumption has been that Hunter is going just because he almost went last year, but he's going to go, and he's not. He may not be drafted.
See, the thing with Hunter, what you'd have to ask yourself is how much can he boost his stock?
Yeah.
Like, let's say he comes back. What more can he show? He can show more of a right hand, but he's showing you turning face. He's showing you three-pointer. He's showing you better position defense. right? I mean, he has expanded his game to the level that would make you say, okay, this is what we would expect to get to him in college. I don't know that. And this is not me wishing him to the NBA. So don't no. make it sound, I'm talking not talking to you as much as I am the listeners. I'm not saying I want Hunter to go. But if you're looking at it from the perspective of what can he do to boost himself on NBA draft boards, I don't know if there's much more he could do at the college level to achieve that end.
Well, I mean, the comparison might be Garza. Because Garza, you know, even after his junior year was going nowhere in the draft, but after his senior year, he did get drafted. And so I think it's not impossible. I mean, in Hunter's case, he's proven he can step out and shoot the ball, and the NBA has to like that. His right hand has improved. Last year, there was no right hand. This year, there's a little bit of right hand. So, yeah, he can still improve his right hand. But the one place he could improve is just, and he's improved this some, is just his conditioning, being stronger, being fitter, being more of a presence. I mean, he's always going to have certain athletic limitations, but you know, I think, you know, he could become more attractive to NBA teams, but your point is a good point. I mean, and he may look at it, you know, I can do those things in the G League next year and, or someone may grab onto me late in the second round. I don't know.
But your point, I'm curious what you think of this, Brian and Seth. I think we've all been in agreement that Musa is, I mean, it seems like even still, more likely than not that he goes. I mean, all of the signs pointing in.
Is it? I mean,
well, coming in, all the talk was coming in is that he's a one and done. Like that was his focus. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't. I mean, if he could go, he's getting listed in the second round right now, and that seems to make a lot of sense because, you know, he's supposed to be this switch everything defensive stopper who is elite, and he's not that yet. You know, he's got his moments. But, you know, he's getting toasted by guys sometimes. So, you know, to me, I feel like it's going to be interesting because Michigan has a couple of guys who are second round candidates. And before NIL, it's like, yeah, I can go be in the G League, get paid a little bit and see if I can make the league. You know, how much is Hunter Dickinson worth in NIL next year if he's at Michigan? Mm. Is that seven digits? I think it's seven digits. And if he thinks he's going to be a second round guy and he's not going to be in the league, he's going to be in the G League, then, you know, there's no financial compulsion there. And it seems like college basketball is a hell of a lot more fun than playing for the Fort Wayne Mad Ants.
Yeah. You can't do that for Musa, though. He's international. So
I know you can't do it for Musa. So, but I mean, yeah. To me, Musa's a guy who, yeah, like he could go to the league this year, get drafted in the second round, but, you know, another year under Juwan Howard, he could be a lottery pick. You know, Keegan Murray came back this year. If he went last year, second rounder probably. Mm-hmm. This year he's a lottery pick.
That's right.
So for me, Musa Diabate is like the perfect example of a guy who probably should stay in school, because if he blows up next year with his NBA potential, with the frame, with his athleticism, yeah, he's going to the top 10 picks. So that kind of risk reward is the kind of guy who should come back even though he is draftable.
Right. So here's what I'll say, and then what I was getting to, I do think now I feel like it's more likely that he returns than I did at the beginning of the season when I thought he almost certainly is gone. I still think it's more likely than not. It's likelier, give it, what, 55-45, 60-40, maybe, but that's a far cry. It's way ahead of what I thought it was going to be, but I was damn near certain he was going to be a one-and-done guy. Caleb Houston, I can't imagine the circumstance, unless he just didn't want to be in school anymore. I can't imagine the circumstance where he jumped to the pros.
I mean, he's not draftable, right? He's a standstill shooter who, I mean, yeah, he's 6'8", but that's all he does. And so he's got to diversify his game. He's got to get more athletic. He's got to get better lateral agility. Or I don't think he's like, he was top 10 on a lot of these draft boards beginning of the year. And it's like, that is not an NBA player right now. I would be surprised if he got drafted.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I always stop short of making this a basketball only assessment for these guys. If all of these considerations were basketball only assessments, then I think that our thinking is right on. You just don't know how much other circumstances play into their thought processes.
Yeah, some guys just want to go.
Some guys just want to go. Some guys need the financial security. You just mentioned, Seth, that Musa doesn't have NIL that he can lean on either. So, I mean, the financial considerations for him would be different.
That's what their mindset was coming in. And like when we recruited both Caleb and Musa this year, the idea was both of them were thinking they were one and done. Now, Caleb, he played himself out of NBA consideration entirely. So he just might have that choice taken away from him.
He's also young. He could be a senior in high school this year, right? So
But that's another. But no one's going to look at him and be like, Caleb, you're going to get drafted, or you're going to. I mean, there's a question whether teams would even like sign him as a free agent, put him in the G League, and develop him, because like there's, you know, what you're seeing right now is not enough for him to play in the NBA. So his math has changed the most. Hunter's, I think, has changed the least, unless, like Garza, he decides that he really likes playing in college, that NIL changes the math for him as far as financial security, that being the big man on campus and everybody loving him, being the best athlete in Michigan, means something to him, right? Like, hey, like, you know, if that's really cool to him. But his approach has always felt like he wants to get to the NBA. Like, even this year, he's like, they told him he needs to get a three-point shot and a right hook. He went and got those things, and now he's there, right? So, like, if he's having a conversation about what do I need to do to develop in college in order to get to the NBA, that conversation is over. If he's saying, where am I going to have more fun next year, and is the money that different, that's the only way we have that conversation. And then Musa, again, he was looking at the NBA, one and done, and, you know, the math has not really changed except for his draft stock has dropped. But that talent is still something an NBA team is going to want to develop. So I don't think that really changed for him very much either.
All right. I want to switch gears a little bit. Always want to get a little hockey in before we get out of here. The Wolverines finish out the regular season with a two-game tilt versus Ohio State Friday and Saturday of this week. And then they close things out against Notre Dame, who swept them earlier in the season. Here's a question starting off, Brian. When are the Olympic guys back in the lineup? And are you at all surprised that they seemingly haven't missed a beat through all of the Olympic interruption, through the potential distraction of an investigation into the program? None of that has seemed to phase the team at all. They're rolling.
Well, Michigan State is abjectly bad at hockey. So they're pathetic. I mean, I hate Michigan State's athletic department, and I'm upset at how bad their hockey program is. But yeah, I mean, they've played well. They still have a lot of talent, even with those guys gone. It's not as complete of a rating as the World Juniors were. And it should be pointed out that Notre Dame did technically sweep Michigan, but both those games are overtime games, and 3-on-3 hockey is not hockey. So that was a split. It's a split in the pairwise. And for Michigan, you know, this weekend, I don't know if those guys are going to be able to get back by the Ohio State game, but I mean, they probably could. Maybe the Saturday game. I'm not certain either way. I mean, Michigan hockey official account on Twitter was tweeting about getting them back, so maybe they will. And that's going to be important because the series that Michigan played against Ohio State was without the World Junior guys, and so they got clunked on Saturday night 6-1, and probably their worst game of the season, but all their guys were gone. So Ohio State's dropped back because they got swept by Minnesota. Minnesota is now 2 points back with 4 games to go for both teams. So Michigan really needs to keep pace here because Minnesota's last 4 games are against sort of the dregs of the league. So
how has Minnesota looked without LaFontaine?
Fine. Like, I mean, they're still a really good program, and it's not like they have nobody behind LaFontaine. They had guys that they were grooming to replace him. It just happens that they're doing a little bit earlier than they expected. So, you know, it hasn't really affected how they've been playing. So I feel like Michigan, if they can get their guys back and they're still playing as well, they should be able to sweep Ohio State, which is a good team, but doesn't have their talent level. And I think that probably might be necessary unless Penn State does Michigan a big favor this weekend and beats Minnesota at least once.
And Minnesota is another team that lost guys to the Olympics, and people were kind of counting them out because they were down and then they were going to lose all these guys, and they lost LaFontaine, and they're like, okay, Minnesota's out. And they really impressed by, you know, sweeping that series. So, I mean, they're they're a problem now. And like Brian says, you got to keep pace with those guys. And you know, maybe we can beg Stephen Ross to fly these guys back from China as soon as possible or something. Like, if that's what they need is a flight, come on. Like, we've got money in this athletic department. Let's get our guys home and win this division, because there's a number one seed. There's a whole lot of things out in front of this this hockey team right now.
Yeah, the one good thing about the Olympics is that you've seen an opportunity for Luke Hughes to really blossom, and he was incredible this last weekend. I don't know if I ever saw anyone play like the way Hughes played this last weekend, in my mind. And also some of the other young guys have stepped up, Estapa, Edwards, and it was nice to see, even though Brian's right that Michigan State's a complete meatball at this juncture. And
how does that happen? They're a tradition rich hockey program, aren't they?
They were. But it was all Ron Mason. So Ron Mason retires and they hire Jeff Comley, who is the Northern Michigan head coach, who was like had a really long track record of being pretty mediocre, and they got a fluke national title one year and that was it. And then they hired the commissioner of the CCHA,
Anastas, right,
for their next coach, a guy who literally had not coached hockey except for coaching his girl in like 4 or 5 year old, I don't know exactly what age it was, but he had never coached hockey, and they hired him to be their head coach. And then Dan Cole was with the national team, and so he seemed like a pretty good catch, but they just can't recruit. Like, they usually have about one or two guys on the roster who have any skill whatsoever, and that guy got injured this year. They're almost winless since.
Yeah, that Mitch Lewandowski, right?
Yeah, Lewandowski. Like and before, they had Hirose the year before, and they're able to get like one or two guys a year, and that's it.
Their whole thing is, I mean, they still have that Ron Mason level of like, let's score one goal and win 1-0 and just like go into a freaking shell and like make unwatchable hockey. But they don't even have the speed to do that. So, you know, Craig was talking about Luke Hughes' weekend. Like, part of that weekend was every single time Michigan State was going to have a breakaway, Luke Hughes is so much faster than their skaters that he was just coming up and taking the puck away.
It was embarrassing. Yeah. It was almost embarrassing for Michigan State how slow they were. They looked like a beer league team of 50-year-olds compared to what Michigan looked like. And like Brian, I felt badly for them because, you know, as much as I dislike Michigan State, you want them to see him be better than that. I mean, that was awful.
Speak for yourself, Craig. Speak for yourself. Okay. I love Michigan State looking terrible.
One comment on NBA draft stuff.
Yeah.
Is that Hunter Dickinson does not appear on ESPN or Sam Vecenie's top 100.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. He's nowhere. So, that's what I was trying to say. He's nowhere to be found. And I looked at a bunch of them this morning trying to say, well, he must be on some of these lists, and he's not. And so, you know, what? And I think he's probably better off if he can slide into the second round than if he's just, okay, we'll see what you can do in the G League. I mean, I don't know.
Brian's point is one that I'm going to seize upon after this. You know, what does the NIL, what does his NIL potential look like next year? I think that absolutely would be a serious consideration if you're just going to sit in the G League versus being able to work with Juwan another year. Work a really show a more refined right hand another year and get paid as much as you get paid in the G League? I mean, why not, right?
Michigan's going to have to step up and come up with some good ideas. Like, I'm mad that we didn't have an athlete in the Super Bowl ad this year. Like, that's the kind of thing that Michigan needs to be doing right now.
All right, folks, we got to get out of here. Another great roundtable. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back again next week on the next MGO Blog Roundtable. The rest of you, though, be sure to join us tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider at Sports Talk 1050, WTKA The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
got it better than us.
Nope.